Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I am your host for the weekend show, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. I want to first and foremost thank everybody for tuning in throughout the week and sharing all your thoughts and keeping in touch with me, especially over email, fleck@kereport.com. Please keep all those emails coming. Please let me know what guests you like, which ones you want to hear more of, and any of the companies that I've brought on, because I've really been focused on introducing and keeping all of you up to date on a lot of resource companies and even some companies outside of the resource sector. That being said, let's get into this first hour of the weekend show as I am chatting with Jesse Felder. Now, Jesse, big picture here for these markets. We have seen a pretty significant shift in the risk appetite of investors. And this week, as we're recording this late in the day on Wednesday, the cryptocurrencies are driving home this shift of risk appetite, as Bitcoin is approximately 50%. That's 50% off of its highs from just a couple months ago. Really, maybe even 1 month ago. Jesse, take us through this broad shift in risk appetite on the back of this cryptocurrency market, in a way, crashing.
Yeah, well, it's something that, you know, I think these things that are the highest beta, most volatile securities in the markets are really good sentiment indicators. And crypto is really just the latest. We saw, you know, in January, right, we had the GameStop, episode where a lot of these speculative names were just screaming higher. And then in February, we saw a lot of those things peak and roll over. The ARK Innovation Fund is one, you know, I pay attention to and have been, you know, short on and off for the past few months. And, you know, it peaked back in February and has rolled over, you know, pretty dang hard over the last few months. We've seen a lot of SPACs, you know, that have actually just gotten crushed, you know, focused on these space companies and electric vehicles. And like I said, a lot of the highest beta names in the market have peaked and rolled over really hard, which is, to me, just a sign that risk appetite broadly has been shifting. And, you know, I think cryptocurrencies are just the latest in that trend, where we saw the shift out of a lot of these meme stocks and into meme coins over the last month or two. You know, people selling off their GameStop or their AMC, you know, stock or any of these other, you know, speculative names in the stock market and putting it into Dogecoin and all the different, you know, SafeMoon and all the, you know, the different types of speculative coins that have become popular out there. And now that, you know, risk appetite shift is now hitting the crypto market. And I think it's especially interesting today as we're talking, because the Fed minutes were released today and, you know, the Fed was talking about the potential problems that could result from a broader shift in risk appetite, that valuations are extremely high, and you pair that with a high degree of leverage in the financial markets, not just in equity markets, but in crypto, probably has even much higher leverage than we see in the equity markets today, which is already off the charts. And so, you know, this shifting of risk appetite is a really big deal, especially when you consider the leverage behind it, because it could spiral into something, you know, bigger pretty quickly.
Now, if that happens, if we do see this, I guess, issue broadly for the market spiral into something bigger, does it take everything down with it, Jesse? Are we talking a recession, a longer recession than just the little blip that we saw in the markets last year?
Well, I think it's interesting to see, you know, that commodities have rolled over this week, too. You know, I use DeMarc indicators, you know, as a sign of trend exhaustion. And recently we had a weekly sell signal on, you know, the commodities index, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And we've seen lumber prices come back, you know, dramatically. And that was really the one I think everybody was paying attention to. And so, yeah, I mean, we're seeing basically everything. Now, I don't think this necessarily points to recession, but, you know, I think it was really interesting. I know you want to get to this in a little bit, but to see that the jobs report last month was really disappointing and the surprise to the downside dramatically. And at the same time, the inflation report surprised to the upside even more than we've ever seen before in the history of CPI, you know, and versus expectations. And so that to me just kind of points to potential for, instead of, to me, the consensus right now points would be, surging growth and inflation, right? The inflation narrative is really taking hold with consumers and investors alike. But that goes, you know, people also believe that goes hand in hand with growth. And if it turns out that that growth narrative is going to also change, that, you know, the economic numbers are going to point to maybe disappointing growth after the next quarter or two, you know, we could be looking at a more of a stagflationary type of episode, which would be absolute worst case for financial assets like stocks and bonds.
So what about that inflation data? And I guess we can loop in the jobs data. One of the arguments for the jobs data maybe being that people are still sitting at home and still getting some government support, so they're not as motivated to get into the job force. That could be holding back some of those numbers. But the inflation data, that really had to hit home for a lot of people. However, the argument still being that this inflation could be transitory, only time will tell. Where's the balance between these two data points that are significant?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the Fed hopes that it's transitory, and they're really trying to, Danny Kahneman fabulous behavioral psychologist has written about this, that, and I think the Fed may be the best example that, people in positions of power, marketing companies, understand the more you repeat something, and absolute untruth, the more people will start to believe it. And I think that's what the Fed is really trying to do, is regardless of whether inflation proves transitory or not, they're trying to manage inflation expectations, because that's really the most important thing right here. It doesn't matter if the Fed believes inflation is transitory. It really matters if consumers believe it, because if they believe it, that inflation is transitory, inflation comes, that it doesn't change their behaviors. But if people believe inflation is not transitory, it changes their behaviors. And we saw a good example of this with the gas shortage on the East Coast, where, people believed that it was, they needed, that it wasn't going to be resolved anytime soon. And so we saw people filling up not just their cars when they didn't necessarily need to, but gas cans and plastic bags. And I mean, there was craziness. And, when that type of a mindset, just imagine if that were to hit other types of goods and services in the economy, people say, you know what, I not only need to buy things today, I need to start stockpiling. That creates an inflationary vicious cycle, or feedback loop, positive feedback loop, where prices then go up, which creates more of an inflationary mindset, which makes people want to stockpile more. We're seeing tons of companies already adopt this mindset where they're saying, okay, we have record low inventories and a variety of things. We need to start stockpiling in order to protect us and to be able to keep our, product lines, keep inventories from going to zero. We saw the lowest inventories among retailers, I think, inventory to sales ratios, I think we've ever seen. So, I do think there are signs that, to me, that structurally point to these trends, not just the jobs trend or the inflation trend, but also the jobs trend being more structural, more, and less transitory. Part of that jobs issue is, I think, a lot of baby boomers. We saw a huge surge in baby boomers retiring over the last, 9 or 12 months. And, their retirement accounts are boosted, and they, say, hey, why do I need to take the risk of going to work? So that is, reducing supply of labor at the same time as, we need to be adding jobs in order to meet the demand, rising demand from reopening of the economy. So a lot of these things, I think, are not just cyclical factors. They have much more to do with these longer term trends. And, I do believe there are a lot of signs that show inflationary expectations are really taking hold. So to me, all of this points, it's not transitory. It's something more significant than that.
So, Jesse, are we going to see the Fed change policy, say, this year, much earlier than they've outlined to the markets? This question is coming on the back of the Fed minutes that we saw today on Wednesday that did outline the potential. There was one sentence in there that said that, you know, there is a possibility that in future meetings, near-term future meetings, they might need to adjust policy.
Yeah, actually, I think what they said was they're going to potentially start talking about, or actually right now they're talking about, talking about potentially, you know, when they need to adjust current policy. So they're not even, you know, talking about adjusting policy. They're talking about whether they need, when they need to start talking about it. And so,
but isn't that the start, though? Isn't that what we're all expecting? They do need to start talking about it before they do anything.
So I think today we saw in the Fed minutes essentially a trial balloon. It's the Fed saying, okay, we're going to put this out there that we're talking about, you know, making changes to policy. And well, let's see how the markets react. And so I think, the Fed, I think what's more likely than a massive change in Fed policy, because the Fed has basically said we're not going to raise interest rates or do anything until 2023. So any surprise, you know, that would go against that, because they've spent so much time and energy kind of setting the expectations of the markets that, you know, 2023, you know, we're not going to do anything before then, that anything that goes against that, you know, could damage their credibility and potentially hurt the markets, et cetera. So I think, you know, what is more likely is and what, you know, a lot of these, you know, economists and things, that I think the consensus is that inflation probably needs to be addressed by fiscal policy, you know, rather than, you know, through taxes and et cetera, rather than and industrial policy, rather than through monetary policy. And to me, that they're trying to also change expectations among investors and consumers in that respect too, that the Fed might not be able to raise interest rates because the debt is too big. And so we might have to, through industrial policy, essentially saying we're gonna use government funds to loosen up some of these supply chain constraints and things. We're going to potentially raise taxes in order to rein in inflation if need be. That might be the avenue for to address inflation, because I think the Fed is just reluctant and potentially unable to, really raise rates to the degree they might need to. I think it was former New York Fed chief said, you know, if inflation's, you know, 3%, the Fed has to raise rates to 4.5% to essentially be hawkish and try and bring it under control. Now, the CPI number came out of 4%. So does that mean Fed funds needs to be 5.5% in order to raise inflation? No way in hell they're going to raise rates to 5.5%. So in that case, we have to find other ways to fight inflation, just because it's just not going to be possible through monetary policy. And all of this, the inflation numbers, you know, last month, and these potentially, you know, this paradigm shift in fiscal and monetary policy, all of this is extremely bullish for the gold price.
Okay, let's talk about gold, because at the start of the week, important or potentially important breakout above that 1850 level. Now, we don't know how gold's going to close, but even on Wednesday, it was getting a little bit of a bounce there. However, again, kind of selling off on the back of those Fed minutes. What do you think about that break above 1850? Where does gold go from here? And really, have we seen a significant shift in momentum and direction after that 8-month correction?
Absolutely. You know, as you and I have been talking over the past couple of months, you know, the thing that I've been pointing to is that the reason for gold's correction over the past 8 months or so is that nominal interest rates had been rising faster than the rate of inflation. We actually saw core CPI come down to, you know, 1.5% or something like that in February and March, really unsustainably low levels, while the 10-year yield, 30-year yield really jumped up from, you know, 50 basis points to 160, 170 basis points on the 10-year, and, you know, 2.5 on almost on the 30-year. So that dynamic of rising real yields really was what, you know, has been a headwind for the gold price over the last eight months or so. That now shifted, right? So we have 30-year yield at 2.3%, something like that. And now core inflation at 3%, So all of a sudden, real rates went from about, from rising, significantly to now they're the most negative they've been in years. And to, this is the actual turning point I've been talking about for a couple of months that changes this headwind to gold prices to a super strong tailwind. The gold price should be running, based on this correlation, could be running, 20% price appreciation year over year. And it's right now, it's essentially pretty close to flat year over year, or, was until this recent rally. So you have this fundamental change, which is really bullish. You pair that with the technical turnaround in the gold price, and on all technical measures I follow, momentum looks really, really good for gold prices, and is probably going to continue higher. You pair the technicals, strong fundamentals, put those things together, and also fact that investors still haven't really put on exposure to gold. Look at gold ETF assets. There really hasn't been any exposure put back on yet. So to me, all of that points to that this rally is for real, and it's probably just the beginning.
Now, what about the majors too? Because the majors actually started bouncing back before gold did, and the larger gold stocks especially have actually led this move higher in gold. How do you view the health of the majors? Where are you focusing some of your gold investments?
Yeah, I think I've probably mentioned, Barrick has been my primary focus during this phase. There was some real good insider buying there. That's one of the things I monitor most closely. It still looks undervalued. I think like I said last time we spoke, investors have been pricing the miners as if they're traditional cyclical businesses, where you should only be willing to pay a very low multiple when their cash flow is good, and the multiple, you can be willing to pay a high multiple when their cash flow is bad, because it's going to, it's cyclical. Cash flow is going to improve. So investors have been only willing to pay a small multiple of cash flow for a lot of these companies because they believed we're near probably the top of the cycle. Now, that mindset's just now in the process of changing, where people are realizing, wait, if these aren't like cyclicals and their cash flow is going to actually keep going up, then we can pay a much higher multiple. And I think we're in the middle or early innings of that process, where investors are going to have to start repricing these stocks, and they're going to, definitely going to outperform to the upside.
One more comment then on the commodity sector broadly. You even mentioned that we did start to see a little bit of a pullback or slowdown, at least in the base metals. How do you view the base metals? If we are in this inflationary environment with still all the spending, especially spending on infrastructure, do you see the argument for base metals after reaching these all-time highs to continue higher?
Yeah, I think so over the next few years. I do believe we have just started a new commodity super cycle, but I do think too many people have come around to that idea, and the commodity could have run up, too quickly. Like my friend Tom McClellan says, a lot of these things, when they go up in a parabolic fashion, they go down in a parabolic fashion as well. And so I think we could see a, pretty serious correction in a lot of these, base commodities broadly. I think I mentioned lumber before, but copper too could probably come back. That said, copper might not be able to come back as much, because the supply demand equation for copper going forward is just incredibly bullish. I think Glencore came out and said, based on the demand over the next few years, we're going to need about three more Glencores in terms of production just to meet the demand. And that's just not going to happen. We saw, I think it's in Argentina, the new, government that's potentially, looking strong down there, wants to impose massive taxes on copper. And we're also seeing, there's an article in the New York Times about, potentially looking into environmental and ethical problems with a lot of miners and things, and potentially addressing those through, political means. All of these things are, that potentially things that constrain supply are massively bullish for prices going forward. So everything I look at is long-term very bullish, but in the short run, I do think we could probably see some more pullback.
Okay, Jesse, it's always great having you on the show, buddy. We'll wrap it up here. A lot to take in, and really some of the key factors that continue to drive these markets in a very interesting shift away from these growth stocks and really away from risk. So we'll see just how much of a correction, first of all, cryptocurrencies go through, but also if the U.S. markets follow to the downside. Jesse, thanks as always for your time, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Had a great time, Corey, as usual. Thanks.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Jesse Felder. I am now chatting with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manages the Euro Pacific Gold Fund. Adrian and I are going to focus more exclusively on the commodities sector and really divide it into two different broad sectors here. Let's start off with precious metals, especially gold. One thing we've noticed throughout this week, especially here, Adrian, is just a broad recovery in now the smaller stocks, gold juniors. We saw the gold majors and the royalty companies really leading the turnaround in gold about 2 months ago, and some of the select juniors were doing well, but just in this week, especially at the beginning of the week, one thing I noticed was a lot of upward movement in juniors across the board in the gold sector. What do you think's driving this? Why all of a sudden are the juniors starting to broadly move higher?
Well, hello, Corey, and thank you for having me again. I was going to say you must have a different list of stocks on your portfolio list than I do, because a lot of the juniors, I mean, certainly more of the juniors are moving, but I still think it's a long way from a broad-based recovery. There's still a lot of them that really haven't picked up at all, but certainly, I mean, certainly in broad terms, we can say that the big royalties, the major miners, they bottomed at the end of February, retested some of them at the end of March, but they've been moving up now, as you said, for the last few months, and selectively, the juniors and explorations were moving, and it's just been a gradual process, I think, to some extent. You know, each week, each month, you know, more of the juniors will pop or will move until, you know, as you said, in the last month, it's been much broader, although by no means universal. I think that's important to mention. I mean, I could name, you know, a whole list of good quality exploration companies that are at the same or even lower prices than they were a month ago. But I think that's when you ask what's happening, I think it's just really more of the same general pattern. Two things. First of all, the seniors always move first. We know that. Let's say 9 times out of 10, they move first, and then the second tiers, and then it slowly moves down to the juniors and exploration companies. So that's just part of a general pattern. And I think you normally get more of the juniors and exploration companies moving, other than on specific events. You get those moving when the gold market appears to have confirmed its move. You know, you don't get that on the initial move, but you get it when they've confirmed the move. And I think the way gold has acted in the last couple of months, you know, moving up with very little in the way of pullback, and now, you know, well, not only well above 1800, but now approaching 1900, then I think, you know, that starts, people wanting to buy. I think it's just a matter that gold has confirmed its move, and people are now willing to move down to the juniors.
Now, Adrian, can you pinpoint any maybe certain news event or data point that you think really signified the turn? Or was it simply that gold finally had the correction that it needed? It lasted a little bit longer than some people thought, and it was due for a bounce, and now we're in the early stages of that bounce.
I think it's primarily the latter, to be honest. And we talked about this last time, how after the big run-up, at the beginning of last year, ending at the beginning of August, you know, from end of March to the beginning of August, gold moved up over 40% in US dollar terms. Huge move for an asset like gold. So you had a correction that frankly just lasted a long time. When you think about it, it really wasn't such a deep correction. It was just that it dragged on for so long, which ironically was a sign of strength, meaning there were always people standing there ready to buy. But I think it was just a matter of seller exhaustion, frankly. And that's what often happens with markets. People are always looking. I mean, if you looked on, you know, what was it, March the 1st or whatever it was, the gold, March the 8th, the gold bottomed. I don't think there was any particular development that day. I think you just get a matter of seller exhaustion. And that's often what happens in markets. But of course, and you get the opposite, which is buyer exhaustion. You run out of buyers on the upside. And a stock or market just has to roll over because there's no more people willing to pay the price. But those events always happen against a background of either strong fundamentals or improving fundamentals. And that's what we saw with gold. I mean, the excess money printing that the Fed's doing was really, which they've been doing for the last year now, but they've actually increased what we'll call money printing. The money supply's picked up in the last 3 months. Fed credit, the rate of growth in Fed credit has increased in the last 3 months, whereas one would have thought, and the Fed expected, and analysts expected, but after that initial run last year, you would get a plateauing and perhaps a slow retracement as the economy starts to improve. On the contrary. And the huge spending measures that the current administration has either passed or is in Congress or is planning, $10 to $12 trillion of new spending in the last 2 months has been, you know, proposed. And the Fed has indicated a willingness to accommodate that. That only reinforces, the fundamental positive for gold, which is that the Fed is creating excess credit. And when you hear these news reports about, oh, Fed mentions tapering, let's not forget that it was just a handful of the Fed board members. It was not a board unanimous decision. It was a handful that brought it up. And the Fed agreed to lay out a timeline when they would start to begin to discuss tapering. We're a long way from tapering, and they're not even talking about tapering. But they're laying out a groundwork for when they might begin to talk about it. My gosh, they're really reluctant. They are going to be the most reluctant Federal Reserve ever to tighten money. So those things are very positive. And of course, then we had the inflation numbers. We can talk about that if you want.
One quick comment on that Fed minutes, right? It was a pretty funny comment from them because it said, a number of participants suggested that if the economy continued to make rapid progress towards the committee's goals, it might be appropriate at some time in upcoming meetings to begin discussing a plan for adjusting these asset purchases. So you're right, Adrian. It's a crazy kind of waffly comment
You said it. You said it better than I did. But yeah, they couldn't have thrown in any more words to downplay it more.
No, they really couldn't. Now, one other aspect that I want to talk about here, and we will get into inflation, but on the other side of the commodity spectrum, we are seeing just a little bit of weakness, not even really a correction right now, I don't think, but you see base metals and even energy, they pulled back a little bit from some of their highs. Now, one thing to consider is that some of these highs vastly exceeded all-time highs for especially something, for some of these other base metals. And now they're showing a little bit of weakness. It's kind of this rotation out of base metals into precious metals. What's your takeaway from that environment, the little bit of weakness that's come into these other commodity sectors?
Yeah, you're right. The last week or two, and particularly yesterday, we saw quite a bit of weakness in many of them, and not just commodities, but obviously therefore the commodity stocks as well. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Number one, we have gone too far on the upside, so a little bit of a pullback is more than normal. Secondly, again, you've hit the nail on the head. We can't even begin to call it a correction yet. Maybe we'll lay out a timeline following the Fed when we might begin to discuss whether it's a correction. But these are pretty mild pullbacks at the moment. Now, in individual stocks, you can look and say, ouch. Chevron as an example, big oil company. You know, you could say Chevron was over 111 3 days ago and it's 103 now. Well, you know, ouch. But it's been down there multiple times in the last few weeks, last several weeks. So again, I think we shouldn't exaggerate the moves at the moment. But clearly what happened was the commodities, many of them, had moved too far too soon. And the fundamental news, I don't know if you've seen reports, but the People's Bank of China is discussing with the Fed ways to clamp down on commodity prices, which is really ironic when you think, particularly on the Federal Reserve side, is very ironic when you think, but the Fed, isn't this just what the Fed's been asking for? The Fed's been asking for higher prices. They've said we need more inflation, and they've been asking for, you can't have more inflation without commodity prices going up. So it's really perverse for them suddenly to think, oh, well, maybe we should clamp down on commodity prices. I think the reports are real, but I don't think anything's going to come of it. The Fed there's very little the Fed can do to clamp down on commodity prices. They don't own a whole bunch of commodities, so they can't sell. The only way to clamp down on high commodity prices for the Fed would be to tighten the money supply, and they're not going to do that anytime soon. So I suspect that what you'll see from this weakening and from these reports of China and the U.S. trying to clamp down on commodity prices, what you'll see is some softening at the margin for a short period of time. You know, people who've been hoarding, because there's a lot of hoarding, let's not forget there's hoarding and there's high inventories in some of these commodities. You'll get those people backing off new buying, perhaps even selling. People who are looking to buy will just hold off a little bit if they can do so. But I don't think this is a long-lasting. I don't think this is a long-lasting thing at all. Will they be able to suppress real economic demand for commodities? Absolutely no. And there's no reason they should, frankly.
So, Adrian, just a quick comment then regarding inflation before we wrap this up. Look, the inflation data last week vastly exceeded expectations. On the upside, everyone's still saying, is it transitory? Will it last? We don't know, and we won't know until, well, time tells. But what do you think about that inflation data that came in on the upside and just how big of a driver that could continue to be for commodities broadly?
Yeah, I mean, clearly the Fed and its various apologists in the media and in Congress, I mean, clearly there are a couple of factors that you could say make it perhaps suggest it might be transitory. I mean, clearly we were coming off a very, very depressed April of last year. So there's what's called the base effect, and we see that all the time, right? We see that with corporate earnings reports. Oh, we had a great quarter. Eh, it wasn't such a great quarter. It was just such a lousy quarter last year, right? So the base effect is a real thing, but, you know, let's not make too much of the base effect. If you, everyone's saying April last year, the beginning of the lockdown, it was such a low number. Well, look at the actual level of the consumer price index and the producer price index for April this year and compare it with February last year or January last year or December the year before. We're still way up, over 4% from those 3 months to this January. So it is simply not true. The base effect is real, but it's simply not true to say that April's weak numbers a year ago account for all we're seeing today. And the second thing, obviously, is that if you look at the absolute levels, we've had increasing consumer prices for several months now. This isn't just a matter that, oh, this is high compared with a year ago, or, oh, you know, we can now take our masks off and everyone's spending money again. This has been increasing now for months. So although April might be a particularly high month, I don't think, you know, numbers over 2% are transitory by any means. And one last thing, if I may, you know, let's not forget gas. You know, we had the pipeline hacking. And in the media, they've been talking about high gas prices and the hack, the pipeline hack, in the same sentence. Let's not forget that the April numbers were before the hack. They were before the hack. So gasoline prices already moving up, nationwide average over $3 a gallon, already moving up before the hack. Let's not forget also that the higher wages that we've seen, you know, everyone's talking about the worker shortage. You know, we talked about that two weeks ago. That's a real thing. So now companies are paying more for, low-level workers. Restaurant I go to says that they're paying their dishwasher $18,000 a year, which is actually the average income in Puerto Rico is $18,000. So a dishwasher is now getting paid the average wage in Puerto Rico because they can't find people. Now, the point I'm going to make is typically, first of all, these numbers from April do not reflect higher wages yet. Those higher wages have not yet worked their way into higher consumer goods. So they don't reflect that either. Secondly, wage increases tend not to be transitory. You do not say to somebody, well, I know I gave you a raise two weeks ago, but now we're going to cut it this week. You don't do that. You can't do that. So wage increases are not transitory. So no, I don't think this is I don't think this is transitory at all.
Okay. Adrian, I appreciate your thoughts on these markets, especially, well, resource focused here. And there has been a bit of a change just in the last really week, but then also about a month and a half ago as well, a change in direction for the precious metals. So now the question is just how long can it run for? Adrian, great chatting with you. Thank you for sharing some of your thoughts on this weekend show. I look forward to chatting with you in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
And you, thank you so much for having me, Kai.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to continue our focus in the precious metals space as I am chatting with Dave Erfley, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Now, Dave, this last week was pretty important, I think, for precious metals, especially gold, as gold at the very beginning of the week broke above that 1850 level, which coincided with, depending on how you draw it, the downtrend channel, top end of that downtrend channel that's been in place for 8+ months, and that 200-day moving average. And the important thing about that break is that it actually held throughout the week. I know, including myself, a few people were expecting the price to drop back below, because that has been what we saw in precious metals, an early week breakout with a fade to the end of the week. But it was encouraging to see gold hold those gains and close the week above 1850. Dave, what's your take on that breakout this week in, let's start with just the gold price?
Yeah, Corey, you know, it's been a very good week for the gold bulls, finally. But yeah, you know, I've been discussing this for the past 2 or 3 weeks in my column that this was setting up to happen. The day that it happened, it started to happen on Monday, but the day that the sector really got interesting was Wednesday, when everything was tanking because of what was going on with China, the sudden announcement of cryptocurrency bans. So that is the reason why everything was tanking on Friday, but gold. So we saw gold act as a safe haven for the first time in a while here. And while that was happening, the cryptocurrencies were really getting hit pretty hard. Happened before the Fed minutes come out. So the gold price was firmly above 1850, screaming higher. And then the Fed minutes come out and they were somewhat hawkish, talking about possibly pulling back on their bond buying program. So the gold price immediately came back down to retest the 200-day moving average, but it was intraday retest and it went right back up again. So that was the most interesting thing about Wednesday, was gold was the island of safety while everything else was being hit. So that's very encouraging. And then on Friday, we had a weekly close above that 1850 level, which is what I've been harping on also, because like you said, that's the top of that downtrend line, which also coincides with that 200-day moving average. And what is also interesting is ever since the gold price got back above 1850, the GDXJ has been outperforming the GDX, which is also something I've been talking about starting to take place once 1850 gets cleared. So that 1850 number is very important. And now we're seeing the gold price is really overbought here on a daily basis. It was rising above that 75 RSI on Friday morning, and what's happening now is it's creating a daily flag here above 1850 as well as the GDX. So if the flagging continues here, then I wouldn't be surprised to see the gold price get over 1900 next week.
So, Dave, also looking at a slightly longer chart than just the last week, too, gold has been really stair-stepping higher over the last almost 2 months now. So this is a real change in direction that I think needs to be very encouraging for precious metals investors. And initially, that change in direction was led by the bigger miners. But now, as you said, the juniors, and it's something I noticed this week, is that we were seeing juniors broadly move higher. And I was also seeing some of the lower quality juniors move higher. So that's very encouraging. But sometimes that can also mean a bit of a pause is due because all that money is trickling lower. So is that what you're seeing by saying that, at least on the daily chart, gold and some of the gold stocks are even a little overbought?
Yes. We could see some backing and filling, which would actually be healthy. But going back to your going back and looking a longer term, if you pull back even farther and you go back to May of 2019, the gold market has formed a huge pennant that it's breaking out of right now. And now that it's closed above that 1850 on a weekly basis, that's a technical breakout. I mean, previously during this long nearly 10 month correction in the gold price, we've seen the gold price run up to that downtrend line and then come right back down quickly. As a matter of fact, it created two separate island reversals once it got to that downtrend line. And the last one was right at the beginning of the year, which was very disheartening for a lot for the gold bulls. I mean, the gold price was running up into 2021. Tax loss season was over. They placed their bets in their favorite juniors. And all of a sudden, the gold price did that. The miners did that island reversal and dashed their hopes once again. And we had another 3 months of correction into the end of March.
Dave, what about silver? Because gold definitely is outperforming silver right now. Silver's been a bit more choppy, but you know what? Silver was doing much better during that eight-month correction the gold was in. How are you viewing silver in the broad context of precious metals here?
Yeah, I mean, if you take a look at the silver chart, the long-term silver chart, it's consolidating higher. You know, it's basically been a lot stronger than the gold price. It's remained above its 200-day moving average. I mean, it came down and traded below it just for a few days, and its 50-day moving average never crossed below its 200-day moving average. So it's still consolidating below that $30 level. And I think if we see a monthly close above that 28, 28.50 area, I think that the silver price can break out above 30. And once it breaks out above 30, then there's not much resistance until 35. So it looks like it's just a coiled spring here, ready to break out.
Yeah, and we have just over a week before we get that monthly close. But again, it's looking much better for the precious metals. Dave, how aggressive have you been in your portfolio here, managing some of your positions and also balancing out that we are seeing these juniors run some on significantly higher volume?
Well, I've been walking my talk, Corey. You know, I pretty much put to work the rest of my cash this week. And for the past few weeks, I've been busy putting to work the rest of my cash in my portfolio. So I don't have very much cash left in my portfolio because I think this breakout is going to hold. And I think that the risk now is firmly to the upside in the junior sector. I'm sure you're going to see some more backing and filling like we talked about earlier in the discussion here, that it's a bit short-term overbought, but you're going to start to see these juniors take off one by one. The quality juniors, and you've already started to see it in a few of them. So you might even have a down day in the gold price, yet one of these juniors takes off. So I think you're going to start to see that as I expect the weakness to continue to be bought here.
Yeah, look, I've noticed a few juniors already starting to take off. And one thing I've noticed is that it's these juniors that have either just started up drill programs or are about to commence drill programs. Those are really starting to get bought. Dave, what's your strategy, though, when you see juniors or a general area play get bought so aggressively before drill results are coming out?
Yeah, I know what you're referring to. You're referring to that Newfoundland area that we talked about last week. I think it was last week. It might have been the week before. But yeah, I mean, some of them have gone up without even drill results being reported yet, and they're not expected to come out for a month or two yet in this area in Newfoundland that's really gotten hot because of what Newfound Gold is doing there. We talked about Labrador Gold, and since that discussion, they came out and their finance with Newfound Gold and Sprott was upsized another $5 million, and that popped the stock. They've yet to release any more drill results, and my position is getting up there. So I might have to take some off the table before the next results come out because it's the stock is continuing to climb. But yeah, I mean, you really got to be careful with these things. You know, when they go up so much, you don't want to lose all your gains. Per se, if the drill results turn out to be a big dud, but then again, you don't want to sell too much in case they're not. That's why you don't want to put too much of your investment capital into one of these things. Just put a small amount, and then once they get a little over, once they get ahead of themselves, then you take a little bit off the table, and you feel a lot more comfortable holding them.
Exactly. You don't need to sell your whole position, but you can take some money off the table. And if it keeps running, at least you're still gaining, but you then have the ability to redeploy that capital. Any other stocks that have your attention right now, Dave, that maybe either haven't already popped or you think are doing the right work that you're noting to your subscribers?
Yeah, sure. We talked about one already that's in that same area. That's Marathon Gold. They have continued to outperform the sector since the sector topped in August. They're already trading higher than their August high. The company has a satellite pitch continued to announce very good results from. So that's one I really like. That's in my top 10. And another one that I told you about is Argonaut Gold. They're also in my top 10, and they're starting to break out. They're trading right now at a multi-year high because they're pretty much firing on all cylinders on a few projects. You know, they've got their La Colorada mine that they're mining from. So it's kind of a dance they're doing with drilling and mining. But the drill results that came out of there were fantastic and a big surprise. And also their Maginot Construction, which is fully funded, by the way, they've got no debt and they've got all this growth potential. And the company's firing on all cylinders and the market is rewarding it for it.
All right, Dave, interesting chatting with you as always, buddy. And again, a very good week for precious metals, especially gold and even the juniors that did start to get a buy. Encouraging to see how it closed the week as well. And now we have, again, just over a week of trading before the monthly close. Everybody, thank you for tuning in on this weekend show, and thank you for all the comments and emails that I've received throughout this week, and especially on the companies that I've been featuring on the show. Please keep all the emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. I love hearing from all of you, and I'm going to be back maybe with a couple daily editorials on Monday, but definitely on Tuesday. It's another very busy week. And one other final note, please check out that webinar that I am hosting focused on silver with the CPM Group and the Happy Hawaiian. Send me all your questions, fleck@kereport.com. Dave, really appreciate your time. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Corey.